It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+. It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all, welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on test cricket by armchair critics of the game. This is a very special episode, the 200th episode of the podcast. So to help us celebrate the 200th episode, we have the OG host, the OG co-host. Hello Giri, welcome to the podcast.
Hello Ajit, nice to be back. What does OG stand for here?
I think OG in the modern parlance stands for original, I'm told. So.
Original, okay. Original, yeah. Gangster? No. Okay.
Yeah, OG, whatever it might be. OG, okay. Original. Yeah. It's a special episode. When I started, I don't think we envisioned we'll get to this far. So I'm very happy to have you share the 200th episode with me. After all, I mean, it was our dream. We started the podcast together. So great to have you back here.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think we started way back in 2018. Yeah. Almost... New Year's Eve, I think,
precisely.
Just before 2019. Uh-huh. And it's been 4 years. And in 4 years, this is the 200th episode. So it's also a good, I would say, yeah, I've been very prolific.
Well,
in terms of the number of episodes, without compromising on the quality, I have to say. And, you know, like we've always been speaking, you know, whenever we meet, also just like when we met in London the other day for the WTC finals.
Of course.
Unfortunately, that did not go in India's favor. Mm-hmm. But then again, so the focus has always been on test cricket.
Right.
And test cricket for us is, right, that's the holy grail. Right? That's what we seek to, that's where we seek enjoyment. Mm-hmm. And a series like Ashes, that's been going on recently, never ceases to amaze me, actually. Mm-hmm. There's bitter rivalry between the two countries, mm-hmm. England and Australia, Commonwealth countries. It never ceases to, you know, amaze me, like I said. Yeah, and it's just for days like this that I stay up late sometimes to watch cricket, of course, when it's going on in Australia, but mm-hmm. in this case it's in favorable time, but this is what gives us enjoyment, and to talk about the game that we love and adore and enjoy watching, I think making 200 episodes while talking about such a beautiful game of cricket, yeah, it's been a wonderful journey. I congratulate you on that. I must admit I've been away for I think almost a year, just over a year, due to other commitments. Mm-hmm. But it feels really good to be back to talk about cricket again, and also in your company. So it's great to be here. And thank you for having me back.
Yeah. Nah, it's all right. Look, as I said, I have made a few friends along the way, but I cannot forget the OG co-host as well, right? So it's a special episode, and you deserve to be back. As I said, it was sort of a dream that we devised together, and of course, I can understand family commitments and other commitments which you may have. And because of that, you decided to take a backseat, and it's perfectly understandable. But thanks for coming on the 200th episode so that we can actually recall some of the nice things that have happened. But before we lose ourselves in nostalgia, I think let's come back to the present for a little bit. Did you see the Ashes test that's currently going on? England seemed to have finally, well, come back to basketball.
Yeah, I think it's the tide started to turn towards England. If I may say so, I guess you've also spoken about this in the previous episode, right? The Headingley test, which changed the momentum for England, and specifically Mark Wood doing that with that rocket spell of his, and also with the very handy batting down the order.
Yes. Very important. Yes.
Yeah. So what a wonderful cricketer. I mean, I've not seen a fast bowler always smiling, you know, enjoying his rocket spells. If you remember the old days when we were watching Shoaib Akhtar, you know, he was always in pain. There was always a grimace whenever he bowled a fast delivery, if you remember. But Mark Wood seems to enjoy his bowling.
Yeah.
I guess he knows his days are numbered as a tearaway quick. Of course, you know, you can't bowl, you can't play for more than 30, 40 matches if you're bowling at that pace. Look at what's happening to Jasprit Bumrah, for example, which is a sad story in itself. But yeah, the momentum changed there for England. And I was actually surprised that Australia seem to have lost a bit of their, let's say, their killing edge. They've lost it a little bit, because when you're on top, when you're batting well, that is, especially, you expect a team of Australia's caliber to go on and make a big score, you know, 400 plus scores. We see that again today as well, that they did cross 300, but, you know, the kind of innings they produced, on very favorable conditions, I must admit, although they were put in by England. Yeah, I think they failed to capitalize on good batting conditions, and they are being paid back by England. And I guess what also is on England's mind, and especially on Ben Stokes and McCullum's minds, is that weather is going to play a part in this match, right, for sure. So they are taking the game directly into their hands, and they are trying to enforce the result, preferably in their favor. And because they're so good in chasing, I guess Edgbaston was just a blemish there. But otherwise, England are pretty good chasing during the last 12 to 18 months. So they're going to impose a big score like they've been doing. The way they have batted, they have, again, you know, like you said, it's basketball. A run rate of more than 5.3, edging closer towards 5.5. And when Zach Crawley was betting, it was pushing 6, right? So amazing batting by Zach Crawley. Australia looked very flat in batting conditions. And they are now definitely in the backseat. They can't, they cannot wrest the initiative away from the England team right now. Although they did get a couple of wickets towards the end of the day, with Crawley dragging one onto his stumps, and Joe Root also falling almost at the end of the day's play. But you can see that when Ben Stokes and Harry Brook come out to bat tomorrow, they'll probably give the first half hour to the bowlers. And Ben Stokes, as we know, he's going to play his natural game, which is to play himself in, and then he's going to move into higher gears very quickly, like he did in Lords, like he did in Headingley. So he's going to do that very soon. And Australia will be left with either England are already 300 plus, right? So they are closer to 400.
Right.
So probably by lunch, or just maybe 1 hour after lunch, if the weather holds up, I think Australia could be looking at a score of in excess of 500 with England declaring. I think declaration will be on Ben Stokes' mind. He would like to see Australia come out to bat again when they're still tired, right?
Right.
And then chase the score, whatever they come up with enough time on hand. I think that's the key for him. So he would like to ensure that there is enough time for them to bat in the second innings.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
See, I mean, I think you've hit all the salient points on how the game will go. But if I were to look a little bit back at the Australian batting innings, well, first of all, Stuart Broad, 600 wickets. Great achievement. I mean, we saw it coming. I mean, we know how competitive a cricketer he is and how seriously he takes his game. And we never doubted once he crossed 500 and how comfortable he is with his fitness and everything else. There's never much of a doubt that he'll get there, and he did beautifully. And so, first of all, congratulations. Wonderful, wonderful achievement. And will we ever see again? I don't know. Two bowlers with 600 plus wickets in the same team, Giri.
No chance. I don't think so. I think, see, the main question right now is, with all these cricket leagues coming up in various parts of the world and the focus shifting, you know, definitely towards the shorter formats, especially the T20. Mm. I don't think we'll ever actually encounter cricketers of such high skill level like James Anderson, Stuart Broad, and all these guys, you know, who are going to play close to 200 test matches. Broad has about 170, James Anderson 180 plus, right? This insane number of test matches for fast bowlers. Of course, they dedicated the latter part of their career completely towards red ball cricket, and that's the effect of the sacrifice they've made. So I feel proud to say that, you know, we should all be proud of them, because they have chosen to serve the purest form of cricket rather than going for the quick and big bucks in the other leagues, right? So it's a testament to their skill level as well as the sacrifices they've made. And coming back to your question of whether we're going to see another player pick up so many wickets in test cricket, probably not. I think we have probably seen the last of the few bowlers who have taken 600 plus wickets. We still have some spinners like Ashwin and Nathan Lyon who could come closer to the 500 mark. But I guess from there on, we'll hardly see any bowlers picking up more in excess of 300 wickets for sure. It's going to be difficult in the coming years unless, you know, all the countries, member countries, especially the test playing nations, dedicate more resources towards the promotion of test cricket. Of course, we have the WTC and all that, but still, you know, we are still barely scratching the surface with these big leagues. Very tempting, you know. It's going to set up their life. Just let's be honest about it, because it's a lot of money, and that's going to set up their lives. They can settle down easily. But test cricket is for the hard toil, right? So you should be willing to spend time not just for 5 days on the field, but also in preparation for that. You have to build your body towards that. You have to have good stamina, good strength, and all that, and take care of yourself. So that's a lot of dedication. And James Anderson and now Stuart Broad, amazing cricketers. Stuart Broad, of course, he's a bit eccentric in the way that he always gives it back, right? So he doesn't take anything in, he always gives it back to whoever says something at him towards him. But I have to admit, you know, I have to admire him for his skill level and the achievement he has done. Even though I don't like him for his behavior, but I do like his bowling. You know, he's a wonderful bowler. Great to see that, and big congratulations to him.
Well, he has an attitude, and as a fast bowler, I dare say you should have one of those. It's good. I mean, as you say, there are different kinds of fast bowlers, right? Usually the chuntering, the grumpy fast bowler that sometimes Anderson is, or at times Broad can become. It's the normal. It's more of the norm. You rarely find a Mark Wood who tumbles down twice every over and still gets up smiling. That's the rare fast bowler. That was one of the achievements. The other achievement was a 5-4 by Wokes. So Wokes also has made an important contribution to this England team after his comeback in both, Headingley and here. So he took crucial wickets, scored crucial runs in Headingley. Now he's taken a 5-4. And who knows, tomorrow his work may yet, with the bat, may yet be required. So, yeah, I think this is also a very useful cricketer to have, at least in the short term. He himself is no spring chicken, but we know at least he has probably two good seasons with him. I think Anderson may very well hang up his boots at the end of this Ashes. So if that does happen, Giri, first of all, let's ask you, do you think that'll happen?
One can never be sure. I guess I would say that Anderson may not announce it at the end of the series. He might take a bit of time to spend the summer maybe with his family and then think about it, reflect on it, and then announce it after the summer break, I would say. That's what I'm going with. But it depends, you know. Maybe he has had enough. He's going to be 41 in a couple of weeks or in a few days from now, actually. He'll turn 41 in the, in July. So already we are already in July, right? So 41 is, wow, that's an amazing age, right? To be a fast bowler, to be still operating at that level. Amazing, man. He's one of the greatest gifts to the game, actually. Wasim Akram is still my most favorite fast bowler of all time. But James Anderson is up there. He's up there with him. I think amazing guys. But anyway, you were talking about Chris Woakes. Did you read the tidbit about Chris Woakes and Mark Wood? Apparently, Mark Wood gets a bit tense when he's flying, you know, when they're on a flight. So Chris Woakes apparently is his best mate, and he sits next to him and comforts him while they're traveling. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know this.
So two of the nicest guys in the English cricket team.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. I mean, they look like, if you were to be a girl, they would look like people you would take home to your mother, right? So why not? So, and I can imagine that also there is a camaraderie. There's also a bit of, you know, we'll take care of you, don't worry, bit of that, right? So yeah, especially if there is a nervous flyer in the group. I think these days they have no other choice but to fly a lot. But it's good to hear they take care of each other. Wonderful. Yeah, I was just looking at Anderson's record. He has 10 days to go for his 41st birthday and so on. But indeed, what you said, I mean, he has 688 wickets. And, his effectiveness has not been what it once was. He slowly, I don't know, his effectiveness is reducing, but I don't know if he'll play on for another series just to get to that remaining 12 wickets. I don't see that happening. But yeah, let's see. You might be right. I mean, for me, Anderson bowling from Anderson and at Trafford, winning the game for England, if that's going to be his last test, would be a very nice way to sign off. We'll see if that will come to pass. But you're absolutely right. Speaking of this game, so you're right as well that weather will have a say. So they're predicting as much as a day and a half of loss to weather. Saturday is a whole day write-off is what I heard today. But you know how quickly it can change in this part of the world and these parts of the world. So we keep our eye out. And maybe there's a chance England is just trying to get ahead of the game, ahead of the weather. As you say, I mean, if the lead crosses 120 or 130, let's say the moment they hit 500, they'll declare is my thought process. If they were to get that far, no matter how many overs they have faced, they'll try to get there in shortest possible time. And maybe try to as much pressure on Australia as possible. I mean, I don't see England trying to bat once and bat big. That's what's my point. Let's see if that comes to pass. So, yeah. Do you see England coming back to 2-all and then another decisive test again in the fifth one?
Yeah, for sure. I see that happening. The only thing, of course, you know, the weather will play its part. I was also thinking while you were saying out loud that, you know, England might declare when they reach a score of in excess of 500. I was just thinking maybe Ben Stokes will just declare at the end after the first session tomorrow. I was just thinking that because maybe 150 runs lead is all they need with Australia, you know, depleted and deflated and really tired and come and face a few hours on and off the field, you know, if there are weather changing condition, weather is changing all the while. You play for a few minutes and then you're off again, you're back on again. That's not good for a batter, right? It's for sure it's very difficult for them to settle down. So Ben Stokes might have that in mind, or he will probably keep a very close eye on that. And now that he's out there in the field, on the pitch, he will also be able to assess what the pitch is doing for batters and how good it is for batting. And overhead conditions, you know, when there is a bit of cloud, the ball will move. The only shame is, I mean, Old Trafford has been not so much in favor of bowlers over the years, not as much as Headingley. Yeah, but what I don't like sometimes is it's becoming so flat, right? Maybe the fourth and the fifth day, there will be something for the bowlers, something in it for the bowlers. But if you look at how England batted, maybe England have batted out of their skin. They've really batted well. Australia did not bowl well. There are several factors. But even then, there's not much for the bowlers. And Australia are definitely a spinner short, right? They don't have the premier spinner that Nathan Lyon is. He's out of the Ashes probably till their domestic season, until later this year. So they really miss him. And with no spin bowling option, of course, they have Marnus Labuschagne and Travis Head and Stephen Smith who can roll their arm over. But they are they are not really Nathan Lyon. Nathan Lyon, he has 400 plus wickets, wealth of experience. It's also sad to see, you know, somebody like Todd Murphy, who did so well in India, of course, in spin-friendly conditions.
Right.
The captain doesn't trust him that much. Yeah, there's a lot of question marks. I mean, Australia, I think they've also been traveling for quite some time, including that match that we both watched in at the Oval.
Right.
So the finals. And Pat Cummins, the captain, the bowling captain, he's been playing for, this is his fifth match on the trot, right? So fifth test match. And that is bound to have an effect, or it's going to take a toll on his body and also on his mind, because it's going to be difficult as a captain, right? So you have to set your fields. You also have to bowl well. And if you look at his bowling figures today, he was getting hit all over the park. And credit to Zach Crawley for playing like that. I think he took the game. He took the bull by the horns, and it was just unbelievable. Yeah, but there were, of course, I think Australia may have done some tactical errors. He was standing, his back foot was on the off stump, if you noticed, when Zach Crawley was batting. And he was moving across, and they were trying to bowl straight to him, and he was just covering his stumps and then hitting it either through the line or towards the leg side. He was ensuring that even if he got hit, he was going to be hit outside the line of the stumps, so the LBW was out of question. They did not bowl fuller lengths outside the off stump enough, I would say, initially. And when they did do that later on, he was well settled and he could just smack them. He played some unbelievable drives to the covers, you know, on the up, almost like, I don't want to draw comparison, but somebody like VVS Lakshman reminded me of VVS Lakshman, some of the drives he played through the covers. But anyway, so to draw a line under this and say it's definitely advantage England, weather will play a part. But I really hope Australia have some fight left in them and they can come back and do well with their bat. Steve Smith is due a long score. So is Marnus. Marnus may have played a 50, but they all got starts, but they never converted it into a bigger score like Zach Crawley, right? So I hope at least they can turn that around, Australia. And I hope England do what they're good at, you know, quick runs again and then bowl well later. And a good swan song for Jimmy Anderson, maybe. It'll be good to see two all, right? So it'll be good.
Yeah, let's see. First of all, I still back England, you're right, probably, that they'll try to take this test. But maybe there is another decisive test coming up. But we'll see if the Australian coterie of fast bowlers will be a little ready for it. Because we saw Stark limping away after an injury to his shoulder. He came back and tried to see if he can still carry on, and then decided it's not worth it and went back out. So both, if Stark is actually injured or uncomfortable and Cummins has been a bit, you know, jaded, Australia might be in trouble. They have too much of same sort of attack in this case. But let's see how it goes. But yeah, you could be right. I think England might be on the way up enough that at two all, going into the last test, they may very well be even favorites to take the series. So let's see.
Yeah. Actually, Nasir Hussain made this very point in the commentary. They said England were very rusty in the first couple of matches and Australia were firing on all cylinders on the back of that World Test Championship win.
Right.
And now that the series has reached midpoint or just crossing the midpoint stage, Australia are a bit jaded and a bit tired, while England are on the way up. So we are in for a fascinating finale at the Oval again. So, maybe England will regain the Ashes this time. So it can happen, right? So we'll see.
Perfect. Now, moving on to the other test matches that are currently in progress. Well, one finished today, Sri Lanka versus Pakistan. So let's go there first, maybe. So, caught a bit of this game at all? It was a wonderful advertisement for test match cricket, I thought.
Yeah, I was following the scores a little bit. I didn't watch it live as such. It was during the daytime earlier in the day, right? So it was a bit difficult. I saw some very battling, I mean, the at least according to the scores and the commentary I was following on Cricket Info, some battling innings by Dhananjaya De Silva in both innings, right? So Sri Lanka did, for Sri Lanka, he played a couple of very good innings. But then I think the rear guard action from Pakistani batsmen, that may have been the difference, right? So Saud Shakeel and Salman Aga.
Correct.
These two guys, they played a mammoth partnership and they took the game away from Sri Lankans. Until then, Sri Lanka, I think, were in the ascendancy. They were Pakistan were, I guess, five down for 100 and a bit runs. Right?
Correct.
I think.
Correct.
And these two guys, Saud Shakeel and Aga Salman, they played 150 plus, 160, something like 160 or 170 run partnership.
Exactly.
And then Saud Shakeel batted with the tail amazingly. So. It's incredible that they could score 460 odd runs in response to 300 by Sri Lanka. I mean, Sri Lanka, of course, you know, they were playing in home conditions, in spin-friendly conditions, if I may say so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a bit strange that, you know, they've ended up on the losing side, but Pakistan played really well, apparently. So, did you catch any of the action?
Yes. So, I caught some of the... In fact, I started watching the game exactly when Sarfraz Ahmed was dismissed in the first innings. So, first of all, I think Pakistan have taken a leaf out of the book of England in this case, potentially, and some of their other rivals, they said. So, during this game, Shan Masood had a talk and where he said, you know, they felt in the first World Test Championship final or the recently concluded Championship final, they were way behind the curve and say that they decided to play a bit fast. So, all the batsmen are looking to score fast and were looking to be aggressive. So that probably played a part as well, that Sri Lankan spinners were a bit neutralized. They were attacked, their lengths were attacked, and they were not allowed to settle down. So you see, in the 461, Pakistan in the end had a run rate of only 3.79, but that was mainly due to Saud Shakeel, who actually batted very well with the tail. So after the dismissal of Aga Salman, even, I think he added about 160 runs, 170 runs with the tail, where he himself scored almost 120 runs. So that's very, very well done to him. And it showed the maturity because they were both on around 80 when Aga Salman was dismissed. But then Saud Shakeel went on to make a double hundred, made in double hundred, right? And this guy is one of those people that people felt he was unfairly kept out of the Pakistani setup. And now he's showing why. So he's showing he has the, let's say, the hunger to be a mainstay of their batting for years to come, along with Babar Azam. So a couple of other changes. There was no Mohammad Rizwan in this 11. So Sarfraz Ahmed came back to take his place. And I thought Pakistani fast bowlers did a wonderful job restricting Sri Lanka to 312. So if not for that amazing 100 by Dhananjaya De Silva and some rear guard of his own with their Sri Lankan tail, right? And Angelo Matthews and him sort of. So they were 4 for 54 Sri Lanka. So they were also in a lot of trouble. But then he bailed them out, but not enough. He did a very good job in both innings, apparently. So in the second innings, his dismissal of 82, really, because him and Ramesh Mendis had again started a rear guard. And the lead had just crossed 100 when he was dismissed, Dhananjaya De Silva. And that sort of got them in trouble. So they did their best with what they had. Even with a target of 133 or 131, they tried to make it hard. But Imamul Haq, the opener, carried his bat, played a regular opener's innings, right? Scoring at around 50-60. And Babar Azam and Saud Shakeel made some quick runs and made sure, you know, the target came into hand very quickly. And that was the right approach. And they won the game comfortably, Pakistan. So, by the way, at the beginning of this series, it was sort of almost said that Sri Lanka were the favorites. I was a bit surprised to read that. And they've shown that Pakistan that, no, that was a wrong estimation. So it's a two test match series. They've won a first test match. They can't lose the series anymore. So it's a good start to their new World Test Championship cycle. So looking at the series in general and how it went, do you think Sri Lanka will be able to fight back?
I hope they can. Well, the other thing I have to say about Pakistani team is, I think their last series was in Pakistan, right? Their previous series that they played in test cricket.
Indeed.
Yeah, so it was a home series. They were playing, I think England played Pakistan after so many years.
Right.
And Pakistani team, I think they were under a lot of pressure from the
home crowd.
Yeah, I know, but they were under a lot of pressure to perform in home conditions.
Right.
So now they are playing away and they have nothing to prove, sort of. So they have that kind of an attitude, in my opinion. Mm. Anyway, I can't read their minds, but that's what I think. that seems to be paying off for them. So, and the, one more thing I wanted to highlight in Pakistan innings there, you were talking about South Shakil batting with the tail. If you look at the fast bowlers, you're talking about Pakistani fast bowlers doing a great job, Shaheen Shah, Afridi and Naseem Shah. But if you look at Naseem Shah's batting figures, he has scored...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he has scored 6 runs, but he has played 78 deliveries. So that is 13 overs.
I mean, not just that. He took a whole session. He took a whole session out.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the kind of dedication. This is so, I mean, we know that Pakistani teams are always been have always been very mercurial, right? They come up with such kind of performance once in a while. And it's so amazing to, see and appreciate that. If you have not read this book, I recently finished this book by Wasim Akram with a lot of contribution from Gideon Hay.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Sultan of Swing.
Right.
It's an amazing book. It chronicles his career as well as he talks a lot about how Pakistan cricket works and how especially it doesn't work and the kind of politics they have. I mean, of course, you have to take it with lots of bags of salt. It's his opinion, right? So, but then some of the things he talks about is it's quite amazing. I could relate to what was happening here out in the field. Also during that the home series against England, right? So it's amazing, right? So we have the next crop of Pakistani players, but we don't know if they'll stay in the team for long. And you just mentioned about South Shakil being the next crop of good batters alongside Babar Azam, who are going to take the team forward for the next decade or so. And now he gets this opportunity after a while, right? So it's not fair sometimes, but that's how it works. And Imam Ul Haq is doing well, right? So Imam, he finished the game for them. So he was there till the end to see Pakistan over the line.
Right.
And notwithstanding all the criticism he has been copying over the years, right? About favoritism and all that.
Exactly.
He's still doing a good job, right? So he's still doing a good job.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's unfairly targeted, of course, for being a nephew of a big guy in Pakistani cricket. At the end of the day, it's not his fault who his uncle might be, but he's doing the best he can. If you look at his record, it speaks for itself, so to say. It's not that bad. So think about it that way. And the approach they have taken is very encouraging. I think the last couple of WTC cycles, I think they felt they were underdone and they want to not make the same mistake. So they've really begun in a good way. So that's great to see. Also, it augurs well, right? So Sri Lanka and Pakistan, Sri Lanka will always fight back at home. They're no pushovers. And that's going to be fun if you are a cricket match fan. And may the best team win, I would say, because there is a good chance it'll be a cracker next test match. So I think we should quickly switch over to the ongoing test currently in play, where Kohli is leading India and with a bat, of course. So India, they're 259 for 4. This is very close to the end of day's play. 72 overs have been bowled. And at least Kohli and Jadeja seem to have stemmed the rot a little, because after a very successful opening stand of 139, Yashasvi Jaiswal got out and then Shubman Gill fell cheaply and Rohit Sharma was worked out beautifully by Warrican. So there is no hundreds in the top order yet. Kohli, by the way, while running, seems to have injured himself. He threw himself full length trying to prevent a run out. He was coming back for a quick second. He seemed to have injured his thumb. We are in the meanwhile looking at what's happening, but he'll carry on batting surely. But do you think Kohli will get 100 here? I thought he missed 100 in the previous test. It was there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to make a controversial statement here. This is his big chance.
Fair enough.
Against a depleted West Indian side. This is not really a West Indian side, right? This is not a full strength West Indian side. Let me put it that way. They have some good players, but they're not really performing that well. Look at somebody like Alzari Joseph. He's another one of those tearaway quicks. He doesn't do well at the moment. Of course, one of your favorite bowlers, Shannon Gabriel, is playing.
Yes, right? He took a wicket. The way he bowled.
He took a wicket, Sahane. Yeah. Yeah. Rahane, yes, me glad. Yes. But yeah, what is noticeable here is so Yashasvi Jaiswal has been, so we have identified the next opening batter for India, but we'll see what happens maybe in the next series. I think India plays South Africa, right? Towards the end of the year. So if once he plays in South Africa, it's just a two test series, by the way. It is such a shame. I hate it when they say, announced it to be a two test series in South Africa. Anyway, so when he plays over there, and if he gets a longer run, unlike Prithvi Shaw, for example, so we might be able to see his full repertoire. And I think he's quite capable. He has a temperament. I saw his innings, most of it in the first test match. He played quite well. Of course, he also had got a lot of chances. You know, there were a lot of drop catches and stuff like that. And I think an LBW, which was not given on the field. So he was very lucky to survive, but he made the most of it.
Right.
But I think there is a little bit of a casualty here in Shubman Gill. So if you look at his both innings, in the first innings as well as in the second, the first test match as well as over here in this test match, it's probably too early to say that, but he was dismissed cheaply. So when he's coming one drop or at number three, does not seem to be his position. Maybe he'll need a bit more time to adapt. So I don't know what's going to happen for him if he continues to bat at number three and if he doesn't make a lot of runs. Maybe he will ask Rohit Sharma to give his opening slot back, I guess. But Kohli is on the way up. So Kohli did well last match. It was very, it was a very tenacious innings, right? He spent a lot of time out in the middle. He was very scratchy, but he still managed to score some runs. And now he seems set for 100. With, as you said, 67 runs currently to his name with a strike rate of about 55.
Right.
So it does not seem that bad, but I mean, I would wish for him to score a century here so that he can, take that monkey off his back and then continue scoring runs, just like what happened in that T20 game, right? You remember he hadn't scored a century in a long time, and then he scored the century against Afghanistan, I believe, in the Asia Cup, the previous Asia Cup. And afterwards, he started to find his gear again. He was back to his full form. But he's due a long, big score for quite some time.
Fair enough.
Maybe his star is on the wane. We don't know. But this is his opportunity. So he has to make hay while the sun shines.
Fair enough. So, but from the match perspective itself, look, I read a fact, I mean, which sort of saddened me. West Indies haven't beaten India in a test match in 21 years. So do you think they might take this opportunity to do that?
I wish for that. I mean, I wish they can do that. But India have a very potent bowling lineup. Of course, you see there is a new debutant, Mukesh Kumar.
Exactly. They've changed their bowling lineup a little bit. The spinners remain, but Mukesh and Jaydev Unadkat come in.
Yeah, I guess Unadkat was already there in the previous game, if I'm not wrong.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Yeah, I think so. But anyway, so we have Mukesh Kumar and Jaydev Unadkat, who are not really that experienced in the test arena. Of course, we have Mohammad Siraj leading the attack. But we have two classy spinners in Jadeja and Ashwin. I mean, Ashwin, I still don't know why he was left out of that WTC finals. But anyway, let's not talk about it right now. So India have a very potent bowling lineup. They will dry up the runs for West Indies and they will get frustrated and they will collapse. I mean, I hope I'm proved wrong, but...
yeah, me too.
I have not seen any kind of fight from the West Indian team ever since that double century from in West Indies, I mean, by Jason Holder against England. You remember that match where they won against England?
Oh, that tour in 2019. Yeah.
Fantastic tour. And Mark Wood was bowling like a wind in that series, if you remember. He was also there. But yeah, I think ever since that match, I have not seen them do well in West Indies, West Indian conditions. So I hope they can do well.
Fair enough. So let's do hope, you know, it becomes a tough contest of test cricket, which is what we want. Moving on, I think we should quickly have a chat about the women's Ashes, where England achieved what was considered unachievable not very long ago, that they actually beat Australia in back-to-back limited overs series. They first beat them in a T20A series and then beat them in an ODI series. So this was the first ODI series loss for an Australian women's team in 10 years. I don't know if any cricketing, at least, team can claim such a record. No series loss, forget home and away, for 10 years. And finally, England did that. And they did that because they needed to do that to draw the Ashes, which they have done. I think Australia definitely missed Meg Lanning. She was injured and she pulled out last minute. And it was a big deal. But they were well led by Alyssa Healy, you could say. But and the team is still made of a bunch of champion players. But in that decisive game and the decisive two games, Heather Knight and Nat Sewer-Brunt, they stood up for England. So basically what happened is Australia actually came back with two ODIs remaining. Australia made a comeback and they won that second ODI. So the series was 1-1. But by winning that game, Australia went ahead in points. England had to win the last game, not only to take the series, but more importantly, to draw the Ashes. They did both of those. So Heather Knight deserved the credit in the first ODI when she won the game. And then, but Nat Sewer-Brunt has hit 200s now. And she scored 271 runs in a 3 ODI series, took 3 wickets to go with that. So she was the person of the series. In either case, I thought Alyssa Healy was not very potent with the bat, not the Alyssa Healy that we know, the free-flowing attacking player that she is. Maybe captaincy weighed down her a little bit, but Australia were well beaten in the last ODI. We really congratulate England on actually winning back-to-back limited over series against this Australian team, but also drawing the Ashes itself from a point where they could afford no more than one defeat in five, six games, and they achieved that. So congratulations to them. Your thoughts on this?
Honestly, I did not follow a lot of this women's Ashes, to be honest. I did follow the test match a little bit, and it was a well-deserved win for Australia, of course. But then the limited over series, I only saw the scores here and there. About Alyssa Healy's batting form, I might know the reason why she hasn't done well in batting. It's just a punt. Her husband, Mitchell Starc, apparently has stolen one of her bats.
Oh,
do you know that?
This is terrible.
He bats with one of her bats.
I mean, how terrible is this?
Yeah. So apparently, he was on the lookout for a lighter bat, and then he saw at home, I guess, there was a bat lying outside of a kit.
Right.
And then he picked it up and then, took it away with him. And then she didn't realize. And then he asked her, apparently, one of these days, hey, do you know if any of your bats is missing? And she said, no, I don't think so. And he kept it with himself.
Perfect.
And I guess he's scoring runs with her bat.
He's doing all right.
He's doing all right. Yeah.
He's scoring enough runs and, more importantly, taking wickets. He took a 5-4 in the last game. So I think we clearly know now what seems to be the problem.
Exactly.
But this is terrible.
Yeah. So the lighter bat, Mitchell Starc wanted that lighter bat and he has it. And Alyssa Healy is not doing well with her bat apparently at the moment. So, jokes apart. This is a true fact that he did take her bat. But I'm not sure if that affected her form. But maybe, as you said, captaincy has probably taken a toll. A bit, low on energy. I think it takes a toll, right, being a captain.
Absolutely.
You have personally experienced it last season in your own club. So, so you can tell more about it later. But of course, So I see the same thing happening to Pat Cummins. I hope he comes up. I mean, he gets out of this, he gets a break in some way. Maybe there is a rain break for one day. They don't play at all tomorrow or the day after. He can reset a little bit and then think through his strategy a bit more, come up with better plans. So, I wish them well.
No, absolutely. We wish them the same. That, he took a 6-4 in the third test, but he was also going for a lot of runs. Not very typically what you would consider, Cummins-like bowling. So, let's see if he's able to come out of it. This is important. Also for, going further. So, this is one thing. Now, if you were to move on to the other limited over series, women's cricket, that was Bangladesh women versus India women. So, the T20 series was won by India 2-1, but Bangladesh sort of won the third T20 and they carried the momentum onward and they actually beat India in the first of the ODIs. So, it was a shock because, batting first, Bangladesh did not make a very big score, right? I mean, if you see 152 in a full ODI, at least it was rain affected, but 44 overs is enough time, 152. But what we have seen is scoring rates have been pretty low in this entire series. So from that perspective, they had a competitive score, you could say. And India were looking fairly comfortable. So from, at the halfway mark, you would think they would chase it easily. But Deepthi Sharma made 20, and that was the highest score. And outside of that, there were six other teen scores. But nobody went on to really make a decisive contribution. And India lost with enough time left. Sort of if they had wickets in hand, you would think they would actually chase this down because they were all out with almost 8 hours left in the game. So that was a bit of a surprise if you're an India fan. But then in the next game, which actually concluded today, the second ODI, India came back strong. And they beat Bangladesh. And if you look at it, it was Jemima Rodrigues' show, by the way. So Jemima Rodrigues, first of all, batted Bangladesh almost out of the game. She was one of the few players on this tour to be able to score at, 110 strike rate. She made a very big score. And then not only happy with that, she came back and took 3 wickets, giving just 3 runs. It was very interesting that it was basically she that won the game for India. But now the decider is going to be all important. It's 1-1, right? So I don't know if you followed this closely, but would you gander a prediction?
It's going to be interesting because I did follow one of the matches. I think it was one of the T20 matches. India had a very low score and they still managed to defend it.
Yeah.
It's unpredictable, right? So this women's cricket at the moment is a bit unpredictable, probably because of the conditions over there. I still back India because I don't, I mean, I hope they can't, they don't stutter again. They should be a bit more professional. I guess they were a bit rusty in the first match coming off of that T20 series. So I think India will do the job. But Bangladesh surprisingly have been playing well. So we'll see what happens. I think India should win it anyway.
All right. Let's see if that comes to pass. Now, those are all the, let's say, the important games that we wanted to discuss. So there's not a lot of news off the cricketing field for a change that we would like to talk about. Just one. The Asia Cup schedule is finally out. Any surprises for you there, Giri?
Not really. Of course, India is not playing in Pakistan. So India will play all their games in Sri Lanka, right? So in Sri Lanka, India. Pakistan, I think, is hosting 4 games. Was that 4 or 5? I can't remember,
4.
Actually.
You're right. Yeah.
4 games. So, and the finals will, of course, be played in Colombo. So it will still be in Sri Lanka. So a lot of games in Sri Lanka. And interesting, because it's also in the monsoon season. I don't know how many of the games will actually be played for the full quota of the overs. So we'll see.
I mean, monsoon is at least treating the test matches okay. But you're right, it's a bit later in the year. And end of August is when it will start raining, you're right. But let's hope that, even though there will be some effects, maybe there will be some games that are affected and so on. But we really hope, at least they have kept some reserve days for semifinals and finals and those sort of days. And the game goes through. There are no semifinals here. It's a Super 4 in this case, sorry. So there'll be no just semifinal, but there'll be more chances afforded. So it looked like, it's almost as if this looks like a draw that's been made with India in mind, who are usually bad at knockout sort of games in world tournaments. So it looks like almost been made with India in mind. Let's see if India are able to go ahead and win this trophy this time, Giri.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking back to the day when there was this ICC Champions Trophy finals. You remember? Way back, maybe 20 years ago, almost more than 20 years
versus
ago.
Versus New Zealand or something.
There was this final. No, I think it was Sri Lanka. India and Sri Lanka, they had a final.
Oh, it was washed out.
India were in the finals. Yeah, it was washed out on the first day. There was a reserve day, so they played again. Actually, India batted on the first day, the stipulated day of the final. And they scored a good, they had, I think, 250 plus score. And then Sri Lanka had to bat, but then it rained. The game was a washout. So they started again the next day. And India played well again. And India was on top. And then it rained again and they had to abandon. And they had to share the trophy.
Well, if there are two washouts, so what can you do, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you cannot have any worse luck than that. You have two washouts. So we'll see. I think Asia Cup, it's not really that much of a challenge these days, I have to say. If you think back to the old days when we had a very strong Pakistani and Sri Lankan side playing against India and Bangladesh. Bangladesh is still the minnows back then. But I remember the old days when we had Asia Cup matches in Sharjah, for example.
Right.
Those were really competitive matches. And these matches from the Asia Cup, they are more like warm-ups before the 50-over World Cup in India.
Well, it makes sense, right?
It seems like that anyway. Yeah, it makes sense. So I hope they take it seriously. At least India, they take it seriously. And try out different combinations. You remember, before the previous World Cup, the T20 World Cup, they were trying out so many combinations in India. I don't know if they had a settled squad when they played the T20 World Cup in Australia last time around. So I hope they come up with their playing 11 or the first 12 or 13 people preferred players pretty quickly, and they settle with it rather than mixing and matching very frequently. So we'll see what happens. Am I right in saying that VVS Lakshman will be the coach for the
Indian
team?
This is what I read. I think Dravid might be given a break as well. The coaching staff themselves also need break, right? So we may see that there are rumors that Shikhar Dhawan may be brought back as a captain, one-off, to lead India.
I thought Ruturaj Gaikwad was the captain.
No, but that's...
Was it in the same
series?
No,
that's for the Asian
Games.
Oh,
that's a different
one. That's for the Asian Games where...
Yeah.
Asian I think they're sending a very young team, sort of average age is 21 or something, I read somewhere. They're sending a very young team there. Same thing for the ongoing, the emerging Asia Cup that is currently in progress, where they're trying out a lot of players, giving them the exposure of playing for India at the highest level and so on. Yeah, it might be that some of the fringe players might be given a chance to prove themselves. They might be given a chance that they can show what they're made of and maybe put their case forward. I expect as many as 4 or 5 key players might be rested. Let's see how it goes. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you over there. So we have to see. As I just said, they need to come up with a good playing 11 in preparation for the World Cup. I don't know if they're going to rest Kohli and Rohit Sharma and, for example, Surya Kumar Yadav, those guys, the premier players in the limited over game. I think Surya Kumar Yadav will still play because he's not playing all formats, right? So we have to see what's going to happen. And I hope they have a transition plan in place once Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli decide to call it a day, right? So those two giants of Indian cricket over the last decade, we have some good players already. And it might also be a good time to hand over the captaincy on a permanent basis to Hardik Pandya, for example, instead of Rohit being... I guess Rohit will want to captain India in a home World Cup, right? So he will want to do that. But we need to see. I don't know. His white ball form is still good. I think he's still a good player.
And he's been doing well here as well.
Another year.
In the West Indies.
Yeah, he's been doing well. So it's a good time for him to find form. So it's good for him. But yeah, I think they also need to consider a transition plan. For the limited overs, at least.
All right.
Limited overs,
let's see.
Another question for you. Another question for you. Away from all the international cricket, have you also been following this new league, MLC?
Not much. I mean, much like any other T20 league, I'll probably follow the last 2 or 3 games.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you been following MLC at all?
Not much. I only noticed that a very familiar name is at the top of the table at the moment. Texas, but the owner of that club is Super Kings, Texas Super Kings.
Indeed.
So it's a CSK subsidiary.
You must have seen who the captain is. I mean, there are not a lot of surprises.
Of Duplessis, yeah. It's Of Duplessis.
Well, he's balancing himself well between Bangalore and Chennai. Or Chennai franchise and Bangalore franchise, I must say. So, yeah.
It's exactly what I wanted to mention, actually. So I don't know if he's going to go out of the RCB team now that the team management is going to change. Right, we read about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I remember reading recently. This, that, maybe, the coaching staff have their contracts have not been renewed, which should have been done by now. So maybe the management is thinking of changing the coaching staff. So who knows?
Yeah.
It could very well be.
Hessen and Bangar could go, and then maybe, Duplessis is also on the wrong side of 30.
Oh, but right? He had a very good season. At least as a batsman, I would be loath to let go of him, because I think he still has 1 or 2 good seasons yet.
Yeah, I was reading social media comments the other day on Twitter and Instagram. I noticed a lot of people saying, you should you should send Kohli out of RCB team. A lot of daring comments, you know, a lot of people saying Kohli should be, you know, thrown out of the team and all that.
Well, okay.
It's very
somebody else will take him.
That's,
I will be very happy to take him, I'm sure. Right.
I want to mention one more thing here. I know we are out of time, but there's one more point. Do you follow this Kannada commentary by Vijay Bharadwaj and Jani and those
guys? I've only heard it once or twice. I've not been able to.
Yeah, but they also have a podcast.
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
Or a chat show. It's called DRS.
Uh-huh.
Dressing Room something show. Mm-hmm. Dressing Room mm-hmm. show. Where these guys talk about all cricket matters.
Perfect.
Sometimes funny stuff as well. And there were a lot of people rooting for Vijay Bharadwaj to take over a coaching role in RCB team.
Not a bad idea.
So a lot of
things. Yeah, why not?
Not a bad idea. So mm-hmm. so one of the things Vijay Bharadwaj actually mentioned, it might be a controversial statement. Mm-hmm. What he said is, much of the support staff right now with RCB mm-hmm. is not from Bangalore or Karnataka background. They're actually from Tamil Nadu.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think they have maybe 10 to 15 people who are not from Karnataka. So you were saying you should have people from Karnataka.
Well, I mean, look, again, we are not averse to appointing South African, New Zealand coaches. I don't understand why is it a problem if somebody from Tamil Nadu were to come and coach us.
No, he says,
yeah.
Well, I mean, is there a dearth of, you know, people or talent within the state? That was his question.
I mean, anyway, I think we should bring regionalism into
exactly.
sort of things, but okay.
No, I mean, that was not his point.
Okay.
For the risk of misquoting him and landing in trouble, that's not what he said. He said they're all good people, but maybe you should also look at people from within the region. There could be local talents here. Maybe he was pointing a finger at himself.
I guess he was making a point for himself, and there's nothing wrong there, right? But nonetheless, I mean, you probably see what happens is it's like management change, right? So if a CEO changes, then he brings his own management team and so on, middle management. And it's something like that. But also there are many other factors, I'm sure, that are taken into account. Let's just say deserving people will also get a chance in their own home team or home-based team, whatever that might be. Let's see how that goes. All right. Now, before we say goodbye, I would like to say thank you to the large number of guest co-hosts who've actually graced our podcast, are able to keep this podcast going with me, are helping me. As I said, I've made some excellent friends along the way. So it might be 200, but it's also a lot of credit to the people who've sat with me, have had a chat with me over these topics that we like and continue. So yeah, I would like to thank all my co-hosts that have been on the show over 200 episodes. I cannot individually name every one of them, but a big thanks. So Giri, as wonderful as chat has been, it's time to, I think, end it. Thank you very much once again for coming on the show. And as I said, I would really love it if you could at least show up once a month with all your commitments permitting. So let's see if we can make that happen.
Yeah, let's see. I mean, I also want to add one more point here before we say goodbye. It's a huge effort in, recording a podcast with a guest, arranging with a person who's going to come and speak on the show. There can be conflicting schedules and all that. And in spite of that, you've been, at it for the last 4 years, inviting guests, talking to them, keeping abreast of cricket. I mean, that comes to you naturally, of course. But then again, also doing your day job with your cricket club, the other responsibilities, and also finding time to edit the conversations that you have and post them on the podcasting platform, as well as engaging with people on social media. That's a lot of effort. I mean, I have to say due credit to you, because you've been almost single-handedly managing this for the last 400 bit years. And I'm very happy to see that it has been a long-term project for mm-hmm. you. That was your initial goal as well, if I remember all those years ago when we had the chat in our mm-hmm. study, that we would like to do, record something about cricket and all that. And you always had your goal set as a long-term thing, and you've been doing for 4 years, and as you said, made some wonderful friends. And we happened to meet one of those guests, right, when we were in London while watching the match. So it's such a small world that we come across cricket podcasters across the world. We stumble upon them every other day. So it's a small world. But you're doing a great service to Test cricket. And I'm very happy that you can continue this. And I wish you all the best in not 200, but maybe 2000 episodes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Let's see how it goes. You're recording on an average 50 episodes. And if I count the last 4 years, so on an average 50 episodes per year, that's a good turnout, I would say. But jokes apart, wishing you all the best. And yeah, happy to be here today. And looking forward to many other occasions when I can come and have a chat with you. It's always good to chat with you about cricket. So happy to be here. And once again, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for all the credit. There is some luck that has also played its part. But well, let's just say it's now become a routine. I can't see myself let a whole week go past without an episode. So we'll see how long we can carry this on and how long I'll have my friends and my, all the people who support me through this. So as long as that goes on, I think I'll have the energy to keep going. We wish all our listeners a good day wherever they may be listening from. And we thank them for their patronage and we hope to have them for the next 200 episodes as well. It's a goodbye from me.
And a goodbye from him. Bye-bye.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.